and thank you for joining us. I am your host, Soulful Business and Leadership Coach Jeffrey Biesecker, for this, the last episode of our inaugural 2020 season of The Light Inside. We're going to explore how creativity and the act of improvisation can lead us to becoming more open to our potential while experiencing a life that sings with joy. The desire to create is one of the deepest yearnings of the human soul, and everything and anything you can imagine can also be brought to life. Our guest today goes by the handle The Joy Pusher. Aaron Thompson is a creative machine. Having worn the hats of advertising creative director, writer, director, and even freestyle rapper, just to name a few of the careers he has explored. We dive into this conversation discussing how creativity involves breaking out of established patterns in order to look at things in a different way. On episode number 0045 of The Light Inside. Today, I'd like to take a moment to tell you about a project that is connecting with others in a super meaningful way. The Borgen Project is fighting for the underdog with their mission to address poverty. As one of the most powerful nations on earth, our leaders in the United States can and should be doing more. The Borgen Project's innovative national campaign is working to make poverty a focus of U.S. foreign policy. Did you know worldwide, 736 million people live in extreme poverty? About half of the world's poor, around 368 million, live in just five countries. In developing regions, 1 in 10 people live on less than $1.90 a day. That's just $1.90 a day. An estimated 2.5 billion people lack access to improved and safe sanitation. 1 billion people live without electricity, and hundreds of millions more live with unreliable or expensive power. Poverty is the principal cause of global world hunger. As of 2018, 822 million people are struggling with hunger worldwide. That's 1 in 9 people. Over 2 billion people lack regular access to safe, nutritious, and sufficient food. And 785 million people drink unsafe water or have to travel more than 30 minutes just to get a drink. By focusing on mobilization of people, educating others on the devastating effects of poverty and hunger, and building awareness of the ever-increasing global issue, you can become a force to help bring about the necessary changes. The Borgen Project is an incredible nonprofit organization. In a nutshell, the organization is doing amazing work to fight extreme poverty and hunger. If you'd like to become a powerful agent joining in the fight, visit borgenproject.org. That's B-O-R-G-E-N project.org today to find out how you can take action now in helping to end the global fight on hunger and poverty. This episode is wordsmith and idea machine Aaron Thompson. As an advertising creative director, marketing guru, writer, speaker, podcaster, and all-around creative machine, he teaches others how the art of improvisation can unlock your potential. Hello, Aaron, and thank you for joining us. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. Good afternoon, evening, I guess. Yeah.
Good morning to you in Australia. You are in Sydney currently, correct?
Yeah, I'm in Sydney. It's a beautiful morning here. And yeah.
Awesome. You are an expat living in Sydney, correct?
I am, yeah. I've been in Sydney now for 16 years.
Really?
Cool. Maybe even longer than that.
So what area did you originate out of? You were here in the States, grew up in the States, correct?
Yeah, I'm a San Franciscan by birth.
All right.
My parents moved around quite a lot. So as a young child, I actually went to 11 different schools by the time I graduated high school. So my parents were quite mobile.
Yeah.
But I sort of landed on the East Coast for most of high school and then went to university down south and then kind of migrated to New York and have spent most of my early professional career in New York.
Cool. Very cool. I'm excited to have this conversation. You've had quite a story journey throughout life, inspired by the idea of the art of improvisation. You go by the handle, the Joy Pusher, where your mission is centered around the idea of discovering the joy in life. To me, that is just a fantastic mission to base your life off of, to base your journey and your purpose out of. Can you share a little bit with us about your background, where this inspiration to kind of create your source and your purpose out of the art of inspiration came from?
Well, look, Joy Pusher, it's a moniker that sort of is a byproduct of me sort of trying to do one of those things that I think everybody probably should do periodically throughout their personal and perhaps professional life, just sort of kind of checking in with yourself where you're at. What you've achieved, what you haven't achieved, looking at what some of the barriers and roadblocks to your own achieving your own mission or your own purpose might be, identifying your mission and purpose. If you haven't done that, that's a good place to start.
Yes.
For me, I guess, because I'm a bit of a polymath and I'm interested and excited about a lot of different things, I always felt really reluctant to put myself into a box. You know, am I an innovator? Am I a writer? Am I a creative director? You know, am I a copywriter? You know, like there's all these different things, even beyond those I've just listed that I've been involved with or am involved with. It became a real challenge. And so as part of like a brand building is so cliche, but that's what it felt like. It's sort of like a brand building exercise. I was like, all right, how can I find a set of words that feels like it brings together all of the things that I'm great at and celebrates my unique ability in a way that feels purposeful and meaningful, but also inspiring and interesting to other people to hear. And for many years, the way I kind of captured that was with the words wordsmith and idea machine, right? And that's on my personal business card now, because writing is my unique ability and probably the thing I'm best at. But, you know, I get excited about potential and I see ideas everywhere and probably to my own detriment. And it was only after kind of revisiting it, I think this is probably now the second or third time I've kind of gone around on my own personal brand, where I saw the thread of bringing joy to people through everything that I'd ever really done, whether that was through writing, advertising in my years as an ad man and a creative director that was funny. Ads usually work better than serious or hard sell ads. So I had comedy as a through line there. Even to one of my more recent startups, which was a fintech called Zooper, which was a superannuation startup. Superannuation is sort of Australia's version of a 401k meets Social Security. And, you know, that's a super boring industry, but we made it fun. We made it engaging. We made it interesting for people to interact.
Yeah. That would be a challenge.
Yeah. It was a massive challenge. And I love creative challenges. I love creative problem solving. And I love being able to use joy and levity and humor to connect with people, to help them move forward in their own lives on their own journey. So like I said, whether that's through having a more positive relationship with their money, to having a more positive relationship with themselves, having a more positive relationship with the products and brands they interact with, and so forth. So that's sort of how I landed in it. I take sort of a tongue-in-cheek approach to how I describe it in terms of like using drug dealer language, but I'm slinging laughter.
That's it, creativeness. You're peddling the joy, be what it may. I can really relate because I've taken a very similar path and trajectory through life myself. I've been somewhat of a polymath, that adventurer myself, dodging from career to career to career, changing it up and stimulated and moving forward by this whole notion that as human creatures, we are guided by change. We, from my perspective, thrive in that evolution and exist with that logical mind we've been given, those feelings and thoughts we've been given in this microcosm of creativity. I nod my hat to the many hats you've worn.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I appreciate that.
That is, to me, the ultimate freeing, the ultimate exploring of who and what we can be as human beings.
Well, in the spirit of kind of where you started off with the idea of improvisation, you know, there's the probably the most fundamental piece or part of improvisation is a thing called yes and, right?
Yes,
yes is about accepting yes. reality, and the and is adding to or building on that reality. And I often say that people who say no live in the comfort and safety of their own world and their own limited expectations of perception of the world. People who say yes go on to have glorious adventures, right? And the words that you just said, guided by change, I think are really, really interesting. Like, because the ability to say yes to things, to explore things, is all around us. And it's fear, generally speaking, that will hold us back, whether it's a real fear, like, is my parachute going to open? Or
yes.
a perceived fear of, you know, will people like me if I do this?
We look for so many of those parachutes, those golden parachutes throughout lives.
True,
we look for those fail safes and those fallbacks.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And that can be often a challenging notion to approach. How do we tiptoe up to that edge when we're taught and patterned by and large throughout our education, our being, our society, to reel it back and play it safe?
Yeah, stay in your lane. Everyone wants to put you in a box.
Yeah, stay in your lane. You know, it's understanding where your lane is leading is very huge and crucial in discovering your purpose, discovering where you find value and meaning. Where am I acting from? I just had a great conversation about that this week that's coming out. But understanding what truly lights you up is one thing, but where do we go once the light is on? What do we create?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's a great question. I'm curious to hear from you how you recognize, acknowledge, and act on those moments when you feel guided by change. Because it's such an interesting concept, right?
Yes.
Most of us are resentful of change, don't like change. Change management is one of the biggest business consulting industries there is because people don't like it. You know? So how do you kind of spin that? And what are the telltale signs that you look for where you're like, aha, I'm being guided here, I should pay attention?
This is an interesting one for me to approach because, not speaking from ego, removing ego, I've always felt that need and desire to create, be, and become change. So I have a hard time sometimes, honestly, reeling it back and pointing that reference to say, but how do other people actually experience this? But from my perspective, how do we inspire others with those notions when we're equipped with that kind of open-ended approach? How do we inspire others becomes an even bigger challenge within ourselves. How do we inspire others?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would assume by the virtue of your doing this podcast that it's your intention to inspire others.
I don't feel that probably answered your question at all.
Well, we'll come back to that.
We're riffing on that.
I'm not going to let you off the hook because I am really curious to hear your answer. Like, I can give you I'll give you the converse, right? What comes to me is the converse to that question. That's why I'm so curious about your answer.
Sure.
So for me, all of us in life will have moments where there's an event or a type of event or a type of situation or a type of experience that keeps happening to us. And we keep going, why does this keep happening? Why does this keep happening? I don't like it. And to me, I call them stackers, right? So it could be like the cliched examples. I keep dating the wrong women. I keep having relationships that end this way, right? So what is the problem? Why are all these women wrong? It's what's my issue? How am I behaving in such a way that I'm attracting the wrong kind of people? And so whenever those stacker events pop up for me personally, I kind of have like a rule of three. Like if I hear something three times or I notice something's happened three times, it's time for me to action something, to do something different, to change. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious if for you, there's a more positive corollary where you're like, oh, this is wonderful. Because, you know, otherwise, I don't want to go around life looking for, you know, negative opportunities.
Do we need poke to change? I don't struggle with it because there again, what are we patterned to believe? What are we conditioned to accept? And where do we choose to draw that line and say, I'm moving into creative mode? Now, we're patterned to believe, we struggle with those things. Me, I'm more open. There again, you know, this sounds egotistical, but I've always been that creature that seeks change. It's hard for me to relate back to that.
Yeah, I understand.
I've always felt like that gray goose of exception that somehow dodged that bullet of, I've got to be fearful of this thing. I've got to create this divide that I struggle with.
That's good. That's interesting. So do you think your peers and friends and the people who know you the best would say to themselves, oh man, that Jeffrey, he's all over the place. He doesn't know what he's doing. Or would they say, oh man, what an exciting, interesting cat. He's always doing something cool and new.
I think there's a lot of head scratching. Does it truly know me? I think understand. That goes for saying those people that we surround ourselves with truly indulge us, truly indulge our notions, and truly engage all those idiosyncrasies that are our active improvisation throughout life.
Yeah.
I would say those that know me say, yeah, I think this cat's got his hat on straight. He's a different bird, but he's got to figure it out. He understands himself above all else.
Well, that is gold. That is gold. If you truly believe.
And that can come across as egotistical. I feel like I've been in touch by and large for a good while now. I've been in touch with myself.
Yeah. So if you think if you're in touch with your authentic self and you feel that you're living that and being that fully, that's a tremendous achievement. Like for me, I feel like that's the mission of life. It's to do that. So
yeah.
What was your journey to get to that place like? Like what were the tools or resources or people that you tapped into to kind of make that connection with self?
Much like you, I've been kind of dotted in that pattern where you look back and the dots may not always make sense to the outside world, but to me, it's made perfect sense. I followed a muse. I've been open to change. I've not set limitations. And I just kind of opened up to what makes me feel fulfilled. Where do I know I connect? It took a while to kind of figure that out. Yeah, I'd say I struggled through my 20s. Some of those voices of patterning creeped in. I went through a 9-year stint in the automotive production industry where, in some senses, I guided that notion and went off on a path. I went off on a tangent and was doing this production job. My hat's off to production workers. I know the experience. It's a very bust your ass, run-of-the-mill, kind of tedious pattern of being. But within that, while I was there, I spent 9 years at a production assembly plant, but managed to finagle my way into kind of off-production line work where I was doing somewhat creative things like quality checking and other processes that didn't rely on anybody but myself, and somehow managed to pull off a side gig painting wildlife art in a GM factory and getting paid to do it and having the plant manager come around and regularly check on me. Hey, what are you doing on the side? But I took care of my work. I took care of what I was sent there to do. I made my products. I did my tasks, cranked it out with confidence and said, hey, I can do this. But by the way, I'm going to do my thing.
Yeah, good. Well, so you didn't give over completely the way that so many do.
Yeah. Within that, I made it work. I'm not to say that's going to work for everybody. And there again, that kind of comes across as kind of crass when I think about it. It comes across as kind of crass, but my shit was taken care of. And so nobody fell back on me. Nobody come back and said, hey, you're letting us down. I took care of everything they needed of me and created the space to say, how do we improvise on this? How do we riff on this?
It's interesting that you think that's crass. I don't hear anything crass about what you described. I hear that as using the resources around you to experiment and explore and see what you can finagle. Love that word. To try and manifest something beyond the routine and the mundane.
There again, I'm playing kind of devil's advocate a little bit and jumping right into the hoop of, well, what is generational patterning? What judgments does society reflect back on us? What expectations does the typical work routine reflect back on us? At the end of the day, I covered my bases, went above and beyond, and created the space to improvise.
Yeah. And the generational patterning is really interesting because we've seen it broken across the last three. Grandparents who were lucky to have a job and survive the Great Depression, to parents who had one job, if they were lucky, their whole career, to people, I'm guessing, in our demo, who are more like have had 3 or 4 or 5 different careers inside of our lives so far.
I quit counting.
to like the young people that have come up behind us who are now like, they've got an Instagram business, they're working part-time here, doing stuff with their friends. Like, they're not, the whole shift from, you know, a friend of mine used to joke, there's two kinds of people in the world, employees and employers. But now there's this sort of like third kind, which is just
employed to making a life.
Yeah.
I'm making a life and a life that suits me. Yeah. To me, that's owning who you are and what your experience is. We all have that power and ability. Now, we've been told a lot of different.
Yeah.
We've been programmed a whole lot of different, judging back to my expectations that were relayed upon me in the educational system. I was told a completely different story. I was told a different story about how that scenario played out.
Yeah, it's good. I mean,
and always questioned.
Asking questions is the beginning.
Yes. You don't discover answers unless you first ask a question. Mm. You ask better questions, you get better answers in life.
Yeah.
With everything we do, I feel.
Yeah, I think that's right. I'm just thinking, I'm thinking about how also like in the context of improv, because that's where we started this chat. Like one of the sort of informal rules on an improv stage is don't ask questions. So I was just kind of having this conversation in my head. Like, yes, asking good questions gets good answers, which is the secret to unlocking more and discovering more and creating the possibility to connect more authentically with yourself and the world around you. And yet there's this kind of what feels potentially like a conflicting rule in improv about don't ask questions. Yeah, yeah. And I guess that like to explain,
Can we improv with rules?
Yeah. Well, there's guidelines.
Can we improv with rules? There's a generality throughout there. Can we improv with rules?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think all improvisation is, some people like say, oh, it's making stuff up as you go along, but it's more than that. It's playing to the top of your intelligence. It's using all the knowledge and wisdom and experience you have so far and applying that in the moment where you have to react, adapt, communicate, and move forward. And so I think in the context of an improv show, for example, the idea of not asking questions is about taking responsibility and looking after your scene partner. Like, so like, just for example, like you and I step out on stage and I say to you, hey, where are we? I've immediately made you on the spot try and figure out like where we are, right? And who we are. Like, you don't know anything. I don't know anything. But if I step out on stage next to you and I'm like, hey, Jeffrey, this spaceship is awesome. Hope we get to Mars on time. You're like, oh, cool. We're on a spaceship. We're astronauts. We're on our way to Mars. I can work with that. And if you immediately said to me, why are we going to Mars? The cognitive load is back on me. And now I can think like, oh, God, why are we going to Mars? As opposed to yes-anding it and going, yeah, Mars has got that good ore.
Yeah.
You know, we're gonna mine that sucker and make some really fast mobile phones. You know, and I'd be like, yes, yeah, we all need faster phones so we can record better quality podcasts. I don't know, whatever. It's about reducing that cognitive load on your scene partner. So I guess maybe I've taken a tangent here, but I was just thinking about that sort of,
good. We're improv-ing. Yeah. Let's riff the hell out of this thing tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that you brought that kind of space notion in there, because so often we look at our earthly confines and we look at that notion of stepping into space as stepping into another realm out of that bubble.
Yeah. Right.
That's interesting to look at, because we are so confined and connected sometimes to our groundedness, to our being, to our sense of presence here on Earth.
Oh, yeah.
I also love that in the fact that that connects me to throw in this notion of the great band Parliament Funkadelic, the old P-Funk, George Clinton, the mothership connection. Look that up if you're not familiar. Get in the know and riff a little bit. But within this knowledge, within a certain song lyric, throughout the fabric of this Parliament Funkadelic notion, this George Clinton songwriting, is this notion of free your mind and your ass will follow. As crazy as that is, open your minds. We're riffing tonight. Free your mind and your ass will follow is such a powerful notion. Get out of your own way. What can you do in life? What can you be in life? Where can you explore? What comes to you? What becomes? It's all based on this notion of connecting within our minds, within ourselves.
Yeah, that's cool.
And then finding the possibility.
A prophet, Mr. Clinton was.
Who would have known a rock and roll prophet would exist that teaches us some of our greatest lessons in life?
Yeah, no doubt. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, music is a powerful tool for change, right? Emotional change, inspirational change, creative change.
We're going to get there because you have such a great relationship with that and a great message to convey through that. I think we've got a few dots to kind of riff on.
Okay.
To find our improvisation here, our connection, and how we're going to weave this story. But we're going to earmark that. We're going to come back to this notion of music. Let's stick a little bit longer with this idea of improvisation, of creating and allowing things to manifest in your life. Let's break down what improvisation might mean or become a little bit from your perspective.
In what context? And just in terms of like a force in life?
Yeah. Let's riff. How do you relate to it? Listen, we're going to improv. In asking the question, I might form your idea a little bit too much. So how do you relate to that notion of what it means, where we find our purpose from your perspective?
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that improvisation does, or having an improvisational mindset will give you, is an openness and a willingness to hear other people's ideas, see other points of view and perspectives, with the innate understanding that by listening to them and even building on them, you don't necessarily give up your own. Your own truth will always be your own truth.
Yes.
A lot of people get hung up on that. You say one thing, I say another. We have a different opinion. That's okay. Mine isn't wrong because you believe yours is right. It's an opinion or a perspective. And I think that that becomes a powerful tool in life. When you can move through life and understand that you're always going to encounter people, processes, situations, settings where things feel different, feel uncomfortable, and be able to embrace that with the full awareness and understanding that you are who you are, your authentic self can remain unchanged. You have the tools to move forward and accept what's being offered, another improvisational term, the offer, and use that to explore what's possible. Now, I said before that people who say no live in the comfort and safety of their own small lives, and people who say yes go on to live glorious adventures. One of the watch points in a professional context, and I've certainly been a victim of my own optimism here, is that you can say yes to too many things. And there's lots of self-help books and business gurus who will tell you the secret to success is to say no.
Yes.
I think it's understanding what to say yes to, and when to say no. Sometimes you have to say yes to go on the journey to discover everything that you're possibly saying no to.
Yeah.
So I think the answer is somewhere is both, ironically.
Finding balance in that value. Mm. What do I value? And finding balance in what is a definite yes and what is a definite no for me? And where do those gray areas lie?
I'm glad you said definite, because that's also really interesting, because so many of us live in this sort of in the gray areas, right? Whereas if you're making a conscious decision like, yes, I am embracing the pursuit of this ideal, then you've made a clear decision and you can go for that with all your strength, integrity, and intent. If you say no, then the decision's done and you don't need to give it any more energy. But if you're in that gray area, that's where the struggle is, because you're waffling.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to riff on this. Improvisation is freeing and fluid. But sometimes when that fluid doesn't have some sort of container or containment, it runs all over the goddamn place. It creates a big mess.
Yeah. Well, sometimes you have to make a big mess to find where the cleany, shiny bit is underneath it. Like we use the kind of behavioral science terminology of divergent and convergent thinking, right? So if you, going back to that yes and tool that I mentioned before, like if you and I are trying to solve a business problem or just even something simple, like where should we go to dinner? You could say, I feel like Chinese, and go, yes, and MSG is not so good for you. You go, yes, and Thai's not so bad. And I don't think that was much MSG. And I'd be saying, yes, and I had Thai yesterday. So why don't we try, if you feel like noodles, maybe we could go Italian. And you go, yes, the Italian's good, but the sauce makes you feel weird. And the thing is, you can go on this massive journey of exploring ideas or possibilities or solutions or restaurants. And as long as you can have that exploration without attachment, then where you land sort of becomes irrelevant, because you've done this divergent process where you've explored all the different types of solutions or restaurants that you might want to enjoy or use. And then you give yourselves permission to go, okay, we've done that bit. Now let's use convergent thinking and whittle out or clean up the mess that we don't like and leave the shiny spot that makes sense to everybody.
Yes, and.
Totally. And again, it doesn't mean you give up your own truth, right? A lot of people feel like, well, if I say yes, what if I don't agree? Or what if I don't like what they're saying? So, you know, one of the examples I always use in a workshop is you might say, I like blue, right? And I say, I like red.
Yeah.
Well, now we're having an argument, which is better, red or blue. But if you say, I like blue because it's the Smurf Christmas party, I can go, yes, and red is a traditional color for Santa. However, it is the Smurf Christmas party. So I haven't given up my truth that I think red is better for Santa, but you've brought up a point that blue is more logical given the circumstances. So the ability to hold on to your truth whilst acknowledging someone else's is the secret to successful conversations. There's nothing better than saying something to someone and have them going, yes, right? You do it instinctively. But a lot of people are afraid to say yes because they feel like it implies agreement. And in some way, all of a sudden, they're going to be obliged to stick to something that they may not feel is right for them.
I love that idea of the yes, and that's always the bridge that keeps us fluid to open the door to continue to improv, to continue to create. Yes, and creates a pathway to potential.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing how that from a very young age, it's that creativity and exploration and playfulness is enjoyed,
yes,
is taught out of us. It's shocking to look back. I mean, yeah, it's yes, just, and I think the rare few people who manage to hold on to it or fight for it or retain it, however it happens for them, become people who, to use, you know, the name of your show, have that light inside that becomes inspirational and powerful and exciting. Often, I think those people are the ones who make some of the most interesting contributions to society.
What is the and on the other side? I like looking back at that. You kind of posed questions towards me about my path and journey. You know, maybe this will reveal a little bit. As that young lad in kindergarten, I was the individual. The teacher would come around, hey, you know, we're supposed to be coloring the green trees. My trees were always purple. In my world, my trees were always purple. Teacher would say, hey, trees are green. You're coloring purple. But I said, yes, and. Yes, and my trees are purple.
Was there a reason your trees are purple?
I don't know. Just always had that affinity for purple. Purple seemed to be kind of that exceptional color.
Yeah.
Related that in a lot of ways throughout my life. Purple was kind of always that exceptional color. How many things do we kind of pigeonhole into that commonality of red, blue, greenness, yellowness? You know, we look at the basic color wheel. The primary colors are red, blue, yellow. Everything's mixed out of those.
Yeah.
Those are bases from an artistic standpoint, being a creative and a creative director yourself. Those are the holy trilogy of existence of color of what we pattern our world out of. How many different combinations of purple do you make out of swirling red, blue, and yellow and create an endless palette?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing how that from a very young age, it's that creativity and exploration and playfulness is and joy is taught out of us. It's shocking to look back. I mean, yeah, it's just, and I think the rare few people who manage to hold on to it or fight for it or retain it, however it happens for them, become people who, to use, you know, the name of your show, have that light inside that becomes inspirational and powerful and exciting. Often, I think those people are the ones who make some of the most interesting contributions to society.
Yeah, yeah. What pushes the envelope?
By the way, if you had known at a young age, there's a certain type of tree that's very popular in Australia called a jacaranda.
Yes.
Jacarandas are purple.
Really?
So if you haven't seen a jacaranda.
Well, see, I was channeling something there.
That's right.
I got to put that on my bucket list. A good shout out to my Australian buddy, Trav Bell, who mentors and speaks on bucket lists. I got to put that on my bucket list and visit the Aussie land down under and see this purple tree. You know, maybe I'll finally be justified in my depiction of purple trees.
So you can take a picture of yourself underneath a purple tree and send it to your teacher. Take that.
Yes, and but there are purple trees out there. Thank you for validating that in me.
Yeah.
Namaste to you for acknowledging that, like me.
They're beautiful trees, but they're also super annoying because they're this rare tree that if anyone who has one near them, all their friends are like, oh, you're so lucky. You have a jacaranda tree. They're gorgeous. But anyone who has one is like, yeah, they're this weird tree that drops things 3 times a year. They're just a mess, right? They drop their flowers, they drop their seeds, and then they drop their like seed pod things. They're all at 3 different times a year. So like you're just, if you have one, you better have a good rake, you know? So
let's dive in this. This is an interesting thing. You know, most of us throughout our existence don't experience purple trees. Let's break this down a little bit. Which portion of the tree is actually purple?
The leaves.
The leaves.
Yeah.
So are we like talking like a full on, I'm going to bring one of my favorite references in here, a full on Prince purple, Purple Rain purple?
Purple Rain?
Or, you know, we just rain. Talking like a general kind of purpliness to them.
No. They are bright purple. Like,
I got to look this up.
It's 1999.
Yeah. You know, like
Purple Rain.
I got a good buddy that's going to appreciate this one. I got to send this over to him. Being both Big Prince fans, you know, he's going to have an affinity for this. Yeah. You know, there again, that's another relation that I built with this cat as this music fan, somebody that pushed boundaries, that wasn't afraid to improv Prince. We're not going to go too far down that path today because it starts to get a little weird when you look at my perspective from it. But where are we pushing boundaries? You know, purple is kind of that combining of the normal, the foundation, like we mentioned, that pushes that envelope. Yeah, looking at gentlemen's clothing, you know, how often, what two colors stand out when you look at shopping for gentlemen for their clothing from your perspective?
Black and white.
Black and white? Black and white?
Yeah.
What would be your next two?
Beige and blue?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I share that experience. Yeah. And sometimes I'm a little lamented. It's like, where is our broadness of color palette here? You know, where do we get to have a little variety as men?
Well, you know what's funny about that is how quickly we as humans sort of institutionalize is not the right word, but we talk about like how things get taught out of you from a young age, and what you're surrounded by becomes your gauge or the lens through which you look at the world and gauge what is appropriate, normal, and acceptable. And being a former New Yorker, where every single day that city would surprise and delight me with something that I could never have expected, and asked for, or you know, known to be possible. And one of the many ways that that city continually surprises people who live there is the street fashion, right? You know, the clothing people wear. There's just so many great people wearing so many great cool things, and you know, doing cool stuff with their hair, and like just bananas, right? I love it. It's such a wonderful kaleidoscope of characters. And when I moved to Sydney, Sydney is a very multicultural city. There's no doubt about it, but it is also very, I think, unintentionally, but still, in reality, quite segregated. And where I live is a very kind of white part of the world. And it's a very normal part of the world, right? I'm using air quotes. Yes. I remember having this very distinct thought one day. I saw a guy walking down the street wearing like bright clothes, and he had a green mohawk.
Yes.
And I said to myself, look at that weirdo. And then the next thing I said to myself was, what is wrong with you? You've been in Australia too long. You need to go back to New York and remind yourself that there's a kaleidoscope of characters out there, and you love that. Like, how did I get to a place where my thought pattern had been a thing that brought me joy now made me look at this person with disdain? And I couldn't kind of resolve that for myself right away. It took me a minute to kind of go, shoot, man, we really are so influenced by who and what we're around, that it can color our perception of the world in ways that we're not even aware of.
You know, that's a great illustration. I've got a personal reference to that. My own oldest daughter just turned 29 in October. On her 29th birthday, what'd she do? She went out and got purple hair.
Wow.
She came back around to visit, you know, a couple days after her birthday, said, hey, like my new hair, I got purple hair. We're like, hey, why purple hair? She said, because next year I turn 30 and everyone expects me to be an adult.
Wow, that's interesting.
I'm going to spend a little bit of time, this last notion, my last hurrah, with purple hair.
And what did you say to her? You say, that's a false narrative? That's a story that you've told yourself? Or did you be like, yeah, you're right?
Great illustration of that. You know, lives in Chicago. This is a little more acceptable there. You know, a little bit more broad thinking. There again, you know, what biases are we creating and perpetuating ourselves by saying one area or the other might be more or less open to it. But in and of itself, that notion was, hey, I've got one last hurrah before all this expectation is thrust on me. I'm supposed to be adult. I'm supposed to let go of some of these creative improvisational notions. That was curious to me. I'm going to bring my own experience into that, just like you. That's interesting to me. We had a discussion. She's pretty open-minded. The apple doesn't fall too far from that purple tree.
What color is the apple?
And there again, you know, she's grown up with these influences. She's grown up kind of mirroring what example we set as adults.
Yeah.
You know, the adults in her life have kind of set a different precedence for her that's allowed a little more freedom. That's told her, go out there and see what's on the other side of that edge and make your own opinion of it. There again, you know, we're creating some of our own patternings. She's mirroring some of my own behavior, some of her own influence in life.
It's interesting, like going back to that perception thing, like the story of your daughter reminds me of this time when there's a train ride that you can take in Norway. It's the world's longest, I think, train ride. And it was like right across the, or not the world's longest, but the world's most beautiful train ride. It's so gorgeous that they live stream from the front of the train all 7 or 8 hours of the trip. It's insane. And I was there and I was on that train and a guy from Colombia sat down across from me and the train wasn't very crowded and we struck up a conversation and he had blue hair. Okay? And it was bright electric blue hair. You know, he's a brown skinned Colombian guy. And we started chatting and I speak a little Spanish. So we kind of hit it off and we were just talking about our travels and what we've been up to. And I was like, hey man, what's up with the hair? And he's like, he told me the story. I couldn't believe it. He said, I always dye my hair when I travel. And I was like, how come? And he goes, because if I travel just as my normal self, right? It's sort of a converse to your daughter's version of the story. Because if I travel as my normal self, then people just see me as sort of like, they perceive me to be sort of a poor brown-skinned person of low status.
Yeah.
But if I have blue hair, I become interesting and more of a curiosity. And people are willing to engage with me as you have. And I was like, oh my God. You know, and I felt, he was awesome. And I was like, man, what an interesting.
I love like, this guy
so,
already.
So much of
I love
us go this guy throughout already. Life thinking we could never have purple hair or blue hair. Here's a guy who's gone, I don't need purple or blue hair, but I'm making that choice so that people will perceive me a way differently than my true authentic self so that I can kind of, really, really cool. I was like, oh man. So when you go home, do you rinse it out? He's like, yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Right. It's a tool.
It's intentionally setting that bias out there and saying it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
We create all kinds of identities and egos and alter egos throughout our lives.
Yeah.
When you become the captain of the ship and say, I'm making a little more decided effort on the experience I want to have, it also bleeds out into the experiences you create in the world.
That's right. I mean, we didn't speak for the whole 7 hours of that train ride, but we had a long chat and it certainly made an impact on me and framed how I look at people of color differently, perhaps, and certainly at least made me aware of some possibly unrealized bias that I didn't even know I was carrying, right? And I don't look for the blue hair in someone else. I look for the empathy in myself.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lesson I got from that person. So it's cool.
That brings to mind that great scene or multiple scenes in A Wizard of Oz, the horse of a different color. Every time you experience that horse in the movie, it was a different color. As human beings, we all are very chameleon-like in that we have many layers in our being. We have very many different colors we display throughout our sense of being, throughout our experience. We don't often acknowledge that.
Yeah, that's just what I was going to say. In fact, I think despite the potential for a rainbow of attitudes and behavior, if you will. Many people, like, again, going back to where we started, many people live in that sort of safe, gray space that feels neutral, that feels normal, right? Doesn't feel risky, doesn't feel like you're putting yourself or out there for judgment or to be judged, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's why so many people wear beige and blue, right? It's like, no one's going to make fun of me for this, right?
So, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and if that's your choice, more power to you for being a horse of that color.
Right.
Steve Jobs, great example of that. You know, wore the same color clothing every day for a good extent of time. But he focused his energy on creating how, you know, yes and. What was his yes and?
Yeah.
He didn't focus on the color of the clothing, the color of the hair. He focused on, you know, what am I creating in this damn world?
Yeah. That's right. I mean, it goes back to Albert Einstein, I think, is the first person who famously said, I wear a brown suit every day so I don't waste valuable brain power deciding what to wear. It just, it's not a priority. My priority is something else. Although those purple and green iMacs were debatable. Revolutionary for their time.
There again, where are we leaning in our own bias, in our own judgment? I'm going to try not to go too far gone on that one, but yeah, you know, when one tends to align themselves with that mind, it may not have been a wise choice, but there again, what doors did it open? Yes, and.
Yeah.
Yeah, it did serve to challenge our own biases as creatives, as design individuals, you know. By and large, from my perspective, from my experience, we form a lot of biases. We form a lot of judgments on what we deem to be creative, on what we deem to be high design. You know, and there again, high-mindedness becomes that linear thinking that often can become its own limit.
We've talked a lot about how that kind of training and bias is limiting. Do you think there are elements of...
Yeah.
Of those things that serve as a positive?
You know, everything in life to me is meant to have a balance. We're looking at those Eastern principles of yin and yang at its core. You know, to me, it's that simple. Everything that has a positive also has a negative. Our very energy, our very fabric of life is based on that notion. In order for us to exist, in order to perceive anything, there's a positive energy and a negative energy. So answering to that question, yes, there is that need to frame things sometimes. There is that either or, that yes and scenario woven through our entire fabric of life that says at times, there has to be an alternative answer to that. That's abstract, but that is also me improvising. Yeah. On that.
Well done, sir. Yeah. Look, I love the idea of alternate answers because we get so caught up on being
who's right, what right,
and feeling safety in the idea that we know something. Yeah. There's yeah. So I think that you can spend more time having a open-minded perspective on the people, circumstances, and the world around you, then it opens you up to way more possibilities and way more interesting things. And again, going back to yes, and it, you can let yourself become aware and invited and part of things without giving up your truth or without going into something that isn't right for you. They're not, those things are not mutually exclusive.
It's all about discovering that soundtrack of your life. And you're going to love me for bringing this back. We said we were going to bring the music back. Let's change our song. I'm going to guide us back to that journey of discovering the soundtrack of your life. You mentioned your inspiration in that art of improv and creating it was living a life that sings with joy. Relate to us how that led to you as this gentleman who wears many hats, who is open and free to improv, to become a game inventor, creating an interactive card game called Song Saga. Let's segue that back to that and bring that music back to the conversation. Sure.
Well, Song Saga is, so, you know, for listeners who have never heard of it before, Song Saga is a tabletop party game for adults that takes you on a musical trip down memory lane. It helps you reconnect with the moments and music and memories that matter to you, and creates an opportunity for you to share the stories of your life and put a hell of a great soundtrack behind them. And the origin story is, it started, I think, with, you know, dance parties for two in our lounge room with my wife and I, and, you know, and
music trying to magic, always, man.
That's right. And always trying to one-up each other, like, oh, I love this song, but you know what the next best song would be to follow this song? And we sort of started trying to gamify Spotify, right? We're like, 60 million songs right here. What can I do with that?
Yeah.
And how can we gamify that experience that, you know, a couple of years ago didn't exist? You know, you mentioned Steve Jobs. It wasn't that long ago when he held up an iPod and said, 1,000 songs in your pocket, right? Now it's 60 million songs. It's all the songs.
Right? It's all the songs that ever will be.
Yeah, you've got all the songs.
That's what happens when you don't fuss about what clothing you put on, right?
Yeah, it's just all there. Wear everything. It looks great. Yeah. So you have all this music and access to all this music. Mm. And I was like, there's got to be a way to gamify it. And so our dance party for two kind of evolved into this weird, obscure rules that only she and I would ever understand. We created a Google Doc that had this long list of, like, if you play a bad song, but only one person thinks it's a bad song, then that you get a second song. But if you get a second bad song, then you lose two turns. And it's like, it got ridiculous, right? And nobody was ever going to be able to keep up. But I had this park in my mind, like, okay, this is a thing that I just want to let percolate and explore. Yeah. And then fast forward a little while, we were at a dinner party with some friends, and there was four of us at dinner. We sat around after dinner, listening to music, drinking some wine. And it so happened that the night of that dinner was also the anniversary of my father-in-law's passing, right? Or as my wife calls it, his graduation. And so when we were sitting around, she was like, hey, do you guys mind if I play a song that reminds me of my dad and, you know, in kind of honor of him? And we're like, of course. So she puts on a Beatles song, and then she starts to tell us, like, how she used to bond over music with her father because he used to love to listen to his rock and roll records really loud, and his wife didn't appreciate that. So he moved his record player and all the records to his wood shop. And they were always covered in dust, and they were always dancing around together in the sawdust. And she would come home after school and spend quality time discovering new music with her dad and dancing around in his wood shop. And it's this beautiful story of connection and deep personal meaning. And then that was a sweet moment. But then another friend of ours was like, well, you know, I have a song that reminds me of my dad and a story. And she told us this story about how she had grown up in a deeply religious household that conflicted with her belief of how things are. And she ran away from home at a young age. And the song she played was R.E.M.'s Losing My Religion. And it was all about how that song sort of, in a way, gave her permission to explore her own journey and to get away and figure out what was right for her. So we went from this celebration of someone's life to this sort of deep, whoa, heavy kind of moment. Then I shared a story that reminded me of my dad and this funny time when he was working on a house and smashed his thumb and was swearing. And then our other friend told a story about how his dad left home at a young age, but when he was young, but that bath time was this time that he had the fondest memories of spending time with his father. And he played this silly kid song that was like, spaghetti, 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 I like spaghetti. You know, like, it's a super ridiculous children's song. And we had this great laugh. So we went on this sort of crazy emotional roller coaster. We listened to four completely different types of music, all of it imbued with deep meaning and personal significance, no longer just for the person sharing the story, but for all of us, right? And we also had bonded even more closer together than we had before that moment. And then we're like, let's do that again, but pick a new topic. And on the way home, I was like, oh, that's the game, right? I was like, that's it. So then a month later, we had a prototype, and now we're
going to link that up. We need to link that up and make that accessible to our guests in the show liners.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. Why don't we give one of your listeners a game? Let's
fantastic.
Let's give it away. So I'll set up a landing page at song-saga.com/lightinside
Sweet.
And people can go there to enter to win a free game.
Yeah.
So song-saga.com/lightinside. If you go there, I'll set up a form and you can enter to try and get yourself a free copy. Otherwise, it's on amazon.com now, or you can order off our website.
Awesome. Let's do that. It's so amazing how music, although it has so many different perspectives, we all relate to it from our personal angle, our personal perspective, has that power to unite us all, has that power to open us all, has that power to convey us the perspective of another, to move us into that experience of how do you relate? And so often we freely give to that. We freely surrender that notion.
Yeah, it's a dance floor democracy.
I'm excited to play the game. This hasn't been on the market very long, has it?
No, so we've spent probably the past year kind of getting it all ready. It's on market now, but it is new. Mm. Yeah, if you want, we can pull some cards. And
I'm going to pick one up. That sounds like fun for the holidays.
Awesome. Yeah, it's a great way to spend quality time with the family without talking about politics. Yeah.
Exactly. You know, music unites us all in some manner. Yeah. Let's jump into that.
So do you want to play a card?
Let's play a card. Yeah, let's play it out.
All right. I'll pull five out of the box. And these are the green cards that I'm pulling out. We call them memory sparkers. And the memory sparkers are just designed to try and spark a memory of like of a song or a moment or a memory.
Okay.
One of my favorite things about the game, by the way, is that there will be times when people get a card and they're like, I can't think of anything. I got nothing. I don't know. Sort of makes me think of this band. And then they'll go onto Spotify or Apple Music or whatever. They'll pull up that band. They'll play the song that they know. Hmm. As soon as the first notes come out of the speaker, they're like, oh, it was spring break and the car broke down. And then these girls came by, you know, like, because music is probably one of the most powerful mnemonics. Right?
I pride myself in my music trivia. You know, I've been an aficionado. I've worked in the music industry for a short stint. So I'm excited to dive in this one. I'm excited to see where this leads.
All right. So I pulled five random prompt cards. Yes. The first one is Terrible Neighbors.
Terrible Neighbors. Okay. And
Terrible Neighbors. Second one is Theme Song for the Movie of Your Life. Third one is Your Ex. Fourth one, Spring Break. Oh, that's funny. I just talked about this. Spring Break. Huh. And the last one, musician you'd most like to have sex with. So that's Terrible Neighbors.
Oh my, we're setting the table on this one. You're really putting my feet to the fire. Okay, so Terrible Neighbors, and the premise is my relation, a song that relates to terrible neighbors. Oh, wow.
Okay, that's
wow, I can see, good. This kind of backs me in a corner, and I'm already stumped on Terrible Neighbors. A song?
Well, pick one. It doesn't have to be that one. Terrible Neighbors, Theme Song for Your Life.
Let's look at Theme Songs of My Life. Spring Break, the Rolling Stones, Can't Get No Satisfaction. I never did anything excited for Spring Break. I never did the whole trip experience. So I would say the Rolling Stones, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. I didn't have that satisfaction of going off and experiencing that wild hoorah spring break journey, that great road trip, that time on the beach and all of that wasted youth.
Right.
So I can't get no satisfaction. The Rolling Stones.
So what were you doing while all your friends were on spring break getting satisfaction?
Oh, we don't want to talk about that. I don't want to send my mother to her early grave.
Wait, that's the story.
How real do we get with this? Probably smoking some weed in a corner somewhere. I'm going to own up. She already knows the fact that it happened. And, you know, being that this is about to evolve and potentially crack open as an acceptable practice, it was probably, you know, that experience.
Yeah.
But yeah, I didn't experience the whole hoorah spring break. Go off. So my wild oats, but you know, I did it my own way.
Too high to fly.
So let's go back again. My ex, you know, there again, I relate that back even bigger than my ex. You know, we had our journeys together. My ex-wife, I'll put it there. The biggest ex in my picture, my ex-wife, but we shared a lot of beautiful memories. We've mended our bridges and learned to stay aligned as human beings together throughout a journey in life. To me, that's a big thing to look at. but relating that back to Prince and my daughter, the most beautiful girl in the world, my daughter, is how I connect my ex to my experience in life. Without that daughter, without that experience of all of that purpleness coming together, she listened to Prince during her birth out of her own non-choice. You know, I went out and bought that Prince album, Diamonds and Pearls, was released on the day of her birth. Went out and bought that album that was playing in the birthing room in the background. So maybe that's where the Purple Rain hair comes from. But, you know, without that beauty of having that relationship and that connection with my very wonderful ex-wife.
Oh. Awesome.
There would be no daughter to experience all of that with. There would be none of that beauty in my life that made me whole as a human being and as a parent and as an adult.
That's great.
Yeah. So circle me back now. I've gotten deep into thought. I'm riffing here, but I lost my train. What fork do we see? Three cards are we down to now?
Well, and also I just think that that whole story of playing Prince in the delivery room, it's just responsible parenting. Being a good dad. I don't see anything wrong with that. It's so good.
Two. Holding it too. Let's dive to the challenge. I love a challenging change. Throw the next card. Let's do three.
Well, that's all right. Look, you've done two. I think that's good. You know, the way would not
throw it down. Taking no satisfaction. Too hard to fly in Florida. Purple Rain. You know, come in there a little bit. But the actual song was "Most Beautiful Girl in the World" by Prince. And my ex, you know, and how do you frame that in a way that becomes a better story in life, but finding the beauty in that relationship. Now, third card, let's go on to that.
All right, we'll do one more. All right, so you did your ex, you did Spring Break. So Spring Break was Rolling Stones, Can't Get No Satisfaction because you were too high to fly to Florida. Your ex...
Oh, let's look at the theme song for my life. Theme song. I'm not going to, sex with someone else. We're not going to go down that path today. terrible neighbors. Yeah. You know, out of loving respect for my fiance, I am not going to go down that path because I don't even ponder that. But
yeah, I think you've done that well. Third and final card. Choose from theme song for the movie of your life.
Theme song for my
musician
life.
Musician you'd like to have sex one. With. Or terrible neighbors.
I would say that's a story that's not been written yet. I'm going to venture out in what is improv, but writing your own damn
perfect
rules.
Way to...
Is that allowable, Aaron? Can I write my own rules? You wrote a lot of rules. I'm going to write my own rules.
Okay. You already have one ex. You don't need another.
That's a song that's not been written yet. Post runner up. Free your mind and your ass will follow. I can't remember what song was that from. That's terrible of me.
You don't write your own rules.
I would say that entire soundtrack of Parliament Funkadelic, that whole like funk movement, would be like an overture of my
Free
life.
Your mind and ass will follow.
That whole funk movement would be an overture of my life. It would require an overture.
An opus.
There you go. You know, it's a journey. Opus. It's a journey. What journey are we creating? One song doesn't sum it up. I'm gonna write my rules on that one. So I'm gonna flip this table on you. You have a podcast, a brilliant podcast at that, called One Word Suggestions, where your callers, your listeners, will phone in or send in one singular word that you riff on and create an entire podcast episode of. Game on, buddy. Dolphins.
Dolphins. Okay. Noted for a future episode.
Oh, we're playing it now. We're not doing it in a future episode. Dolphins. I'm going to put you on the spot. you thought you was going to pull that slide card on me, huh?
Oh, right. You want to talk about dolphins in the context of info.
Can we do it now or do we want to do it future episode?
Oh.
Dolphins.
Well, maybe both. Let me think. So
yeah, give us a little, let's jump in back to a background on the One Word podcast. One Word Suggestions podcast. Give us a little outline of that. Give us like the minute and a half overview.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's really like most people, when they think of improvisation, they think of music, like jazz music, or they think of
Miles Davis, great improv artist.
Yeah. And really, improv is a set of skills, and it's a tool for life, and it's a great, I call it yoga for your communication skills, right? And some of the things that we've already touched on about how it gives you the soft skills or life skills to help you react and adapt and communicate in any given situation and always play to the top of your intelligence. And these are important skills that have no context, that most people have a hard time framing or putting into context when their perception of improv is strictly around music or comedy, right? And so one of the fundamental tenets of improvisation is this thing that we call ensemble philosophy, right? And the ensemble philosophy is basically this idea that whatever happens, if you and I go out into the world to do something, whether that's pitch an idea, run a meeting, put on a great show, do a podcast, my only goal is to have your back, trusting, knowing, believing, accepting that you too have my back, and that together we're going to support each other's ideas, actions, and choices and make each other look good, because we know if we do that, we're both going to look good. We're going to both succeed. And even to be able to look at failure as an opportunity to pivot and learn and grow and adapt together.
Yeah.
So this is the sort of fundamental mindset, if you will, that is so powerful inside a corporate context. And so One Word Suggestion is born out of another one of my businesses called PowerProv. And PowerProv is the top rated kind of corporate team training program in Australia and Asia Pacific region. And what we do is basically empower teams with tools for better communication, collaboration, innovation, and so forth. And so the One Word Suggestion is really born out of that belief that this is a tool for good, that the more people who have it in their arsenal, the better a place the world will become. And to kind of circle back to dolphins, like off the top of my head, normally I get those words and I take some time to carefully consider my response. But one of the things, like, you know, dolphins are brilliant creatures. They're also quite playful, but they play to the top of their intelligence. There's things that, you know, there's a reason. What's the movie? Thanks for All the Fish. You know,
Douglas Adams, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, was it?
Hitchhiker's Guide. Thank you. You brought me back around. I helped you.
So,
I'm so glad you're tuning this, because I'm glad you brought that dolphin reference in about the mindfulness of a dolphin.
Yeah.
That is exactly the channel I was trying to put out there. So I'm glad that tuned in there. Go ahead. Yeah,
picked it up. So, and I guess, you know, the other thing too is, like, while dolphins are understood to be uniquely intelligent beings on their own, they travel in pods, right? And so going back to that ensemble philosophy, there's a presumed belief that they understand that together they are more powerful. They can find more fish.
Yes.
They can find safer harbor. They can alert each other when there's predators in the nearby waters. And that by having each other's back and supporting each other in their own little undersea world, they will thrive and survive, you know, despite the ever increasing number of threats to their existence, whether that's plastics in the water, petroleum in the water, hungry sharks in the water. And that those predators and those problems will always be around, but by using their collaborative powers, they are able to navigate through the sea of life and arrive at their happy place.
I love that reference. If you haven't done your research on dolphins, so much to be learned by these wonderful beings. I'm going to cop on this. You want to corner me back and say, soundtrack to my life. Prince, again, for the win, the song Dolphins.
Whoa.
Soundtrack to my life. Dig in the song, make what you want of it.
Awesome. I'm going to go listen.
I'm going to throw that out there just because it ties the story up here nicely.
Yeah, it's the perfect cherry on.
Go back, pick those lyrics, figure out what the hell you want to figure out about it, because you're going to do that anyway. That's our nature so often, to form our own opinion, our own story. Some of the most inspired beauty of who we are as beings is being able to form what story brings us the song that sings with joy.
Love that.
Where can we go out to listen to more of your song, to find more of your story, and discover more of this brilliance that is Aaron Thompson?
Thanks for asking. It's a lovely question. The easiest way to find out what I'm up to and learn more about the different things I'm involved with is my personal website, which is Aaron, E-R-A-N, Thompson, T-H-O-M-S-O-N.com. Dry Thompson, no P.
Yes.
AaronThompson.com.
I nod my head to your parents because obviously with that creative spelling of your name, they already tipped that hat a little bit to what you were going to become. This wonderful genius of energy and joy and spontaneity. So reach out to Aaron. I suggest highly engage with this world. Get to know this guy.
Thanks.
Just open to the beauty of this human being and see all the light he has inside. I thank you, my friend. This has been the funnest conversation I've had to date in this year-long journey with podcasting.
Wow, that's high praise because I've listened to your podcast and you've had some great guests. I really
you've punched all the tickets that opened all the doors for me. You know, you've pushed me to think. You've created this natural space where I could free who I was.
Yeah.
And be who I was and also allow you the same.
Love that.
Open my mind, and it's been a fun, interesting journey of exploration. I thank you for that. Let's do this again.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure to chat with you, and I really appreciate the opportunity to come on your show.
Likewise, Aaron. I'm so grateful to share this time with you. Let's do it again soon. Thank you. Fashion icon Karl Lagerfeld, chameleon of personal reinvention, once offered this brilliant insight. Reinvent new combinations of what you already own. Improvise. Become more creative. Not because you have to, but because you want to. Evolution is the secret of the next step. When we let go of all of which we know, we become all of which we might be. Embrace your creativity. Be nimble, be fluid, and be open to possibility. Opening allows the light inside of you, inside of all of us, to simply shine bright. Aaron and I have taken a freewheeling journey looking at the insights and opportunities the act of improvisation might bring. Now we want to hear your riff on how improvisation is leading you towards new awareness and discovery, unlocking your creative potential. Drop us a line, share us with a friend, or leave us a freestyle rap on social media by tagging us at The Light Inside Podcast. And don't forget, if you find meaning, purpose, and value in our program, leave us a review at pod.link/thelightinside. 2020 has been an adventure and journey, to say the least. Over the course of this year, we've connected with some amazing human beings and shared an abundance of engaging and inspired energy. As always, we are grateful and thankful for you, our valued listeners, as well as the outstanding guests who have shared their experiences or time. And beyond all else, we are grateful to be a source of inspirational and meaningful discovery as we travel through our shared experience of life. May this be a blessed, happy, and joyous holiday season for you and your families.